It never went forward. The police didn't bring charges, Lyle said. The Cates family got a quick settlement with the school district, and then they moved. But you know what I think? I think Lou Cates went to your home that night to question Ben. I think Lou Cates, who was this powerfully built sort of guy, went to the house to get some answers, and then flew into such a rage he decided to kill the whole family? That makes no sense at all. This guy did 3 years for manslaughter when he was younger. That's what I found out. He hurled a pool ball full throttle at a guy, ended up killing him. He had a violent temper. If Lou Cates thought his daughter'd been molested, I can see rage. Then he did the pentagrams and stuff to throw off suspicion. It doesn't make sense. I had really wanted it to make sense. Your brother doing it doesn't make sense. It's an insane, insane crime. A lot of it isn't going to make sense. That's why people are so obsessed with these murders. If they made any sense, they wouldn't really be mysteries, right? I didn't say anything. It was true. I started fidgeting with the salt and pepper shakers, which were surprisingly nice for a dive. I mean, don't you think it's at least worth looking into? Lyle pushed. This massive, horrible allegation exploding the same day your family's murdered? I guess. You're the boss. So, I say until you find Runner, see if you can get someone in the Cates family to talk to you. $500 if it's Chrissy or Lou. I just want to see if they're still telling the same story about Ben. If they can live with themselves, you know? I mean, it's gotta be a lie, right?
I was feeling shaky again. My faith did not need to be tested right now. Still, I clung to a weird bit of assurance. Ben had never molested me. If he was a child molester, wouldn't he have started with a little girl right at home? Right.
Right, Lyle repeated.
But I'm not sure I'll have more luck than you would. I mean, I'm the sister of the guy they say molested her.
Well, I tried and got nowhere, Lyle shrugged. I'm not good with that kind of thing.
What kind of thing?
Finessing.
Oh, well, that's definitely my kind of thing.
Excellent. And if you're able to set up a meeting, I'd like to come along.
I shrugged silently, stood up, planning on leaving him with the bill, but he belted my name before I got 3 steps.
Libby!
Do you know you have the salt and pepper shakers in your pocket?
I paused for a second, debating acting stunned.
Oh my gosh, I am so absent-minded!
Instead, I just nodded and hustled out the doors. I needed them. Lyle had tracked down Chrissy Cates's mother in Emporia, Kansas, where she lived with her second husband, with whom she'd had a second daughter almost 20 years after the first. Lyle had left several messages in the past year, but she'd never returned his call. That was as far as he'd gotten. Never leave a message for someone you really want to reach. No, you keep phoning and phoning until someone picks up, out of anger or curiosity or fear, and then you blurt out whatever words will keep them on the line. I rang Chrissy's mother 12 times before she picked up the phone, then, in a rush, said, "This is Libby Day, Ben Day's little sister. Do you remember Ben Day?" I heard moist lips part with a puckery sound. Then a thin voice murmured, "Yes, I remember Ben Day. What is this about, please?" Like I was a telemarketer. "I'd like to talk to you or someone in your family about the charges your daughter Chrissy made against Ben."
"We don't talk about that. What was your name? Lizzie? I've remarried, and I have very little contact with my previous family."
"Do you know how I can reach Lou or Chrissy Cates?" She let out a sigh like a single puff of smoke.
"Lou would be in some bar somewhere in the state of Kansas, I'd guess. Chrissy? Drive west on I-70 just past Columbia. Take a left into any of those strip clubs. Don't call again."
Ben Day, January 2, 1985. 12:51 p.m. He took a piece of pink construction paper from Chrissy's bin, folded it in two, wrote on it, "It's Christmas break and I'm thinking of you. Guess who?" with a B at the bottom. She'd get a blast out of that. He thought about taking something from Chrissy's bin and transferring it to Libby's, but decided not to. Libby turning up with something nice would be suspicious. He wondered how big a joke he and his sisters were at school. The three girls shared 1.5 wardrobes, Michelle running around in his old sweaters, Debbie wearing what she scrounged from Michelle, and Libby in what was left. Patched-up boys' blue jeans, soiled old baseball jerseys, cheap-knit dresses that Debbie's belly had stretched out. That was the difference with Chrissy. All her clothes had snap. Deandra, too, with her perfect jeans. If Deandra's jeans were faded, it was because that was the latest style. If they had bleach splatters, it was because she'd bought them with bleach splatters. Deandra had a big allowance. She'd taken him shopping a few times, holding clothes up to him like he was a baby, telling him to smile. Telling him he could work it off, wink, wink. He wasn't sure if guys should let girls buy their clothes, wasn't sure if it was cool or not. Mr. O'Malley, his homeroom teacher, always joked about new shirts his wife was making him wear, but Mr. O'Malley was married. Anyway, Deandra liked him in black, and he didn't have the money to buy anything. Fucking Deandra would have her way as usual. That's another reason it was cool to hang out with Chrissy. She assumed he was cool because he was 15, and to her 15 seemed extremely mature. She wasn't like Deandra, who laughed at him at weird moments. He'd ask her, "What's so funny?" And she'd just giggle through a closed mouth and sputter, "Nothing, you're cute." The first time they'd tried to have sex, he'd been so clumsy with the condom, she'd started laughing, and he'd lost his heart on. The second time, she'd grabbed the condom away from him and tossed it across the room, said screw it, and put him inside her. Now he had a hard on just thinking about it. He was dropping the note in Chrissy's bin, his dick hard as hell, and in walked Mrs. Darksilver, the teacher for second grade. "Hey, Ben, what you doing here?" she smiled. She was in jeans and a sweater, penny loafers, and toddled toward him, carrying a bulletin board and a length of plaid ribbon. He turned away from her, started toward the door back to the high school.
Nothing. Just wanted to drop something off in my sister's bin.
Well, don't run away. Come give me a hug at least. Never see you anymore now that you're the big high school man. She kept coming toward him, loafers padding on the concrete, that big pink grin on her face, with the bangs cut straight across. He'd had a crush on her as a kid, that sharp fringe of black hair. He turned completely away from her and tried to hobble toward the door, his dick still jammed up against his pant leg. But just as he was turning, he could tell she knew what was going on. She dropped that smile, and a disgusted, embarrassed grimace came across her whole face. She didn't even say anything else. That's how he knew that she'd seen it. She was looking at the bin he was in front of. Chrissy Cates, not his sister. He felt like an animal limping away, some wounded buck that needed to be put down. Just shoot. He had flashes of guns sometimes, a barrel against his temple. In one of his notebooks, he'd written a quote by Nietzsche that he'd found while flipping through Bartlett's one day, waiting for the football players to leave the building so he could clean. It is always consoling to think of suicide. It's what gets one through many a bad night. He'd never actually kill himself. He didn't want to be the tragic freak that girls cried over on the news, even though they never talked to him in real life. Somehow that seemed more pathetic than his life already was. Still, at night, when things were really bad and he felt the most trapped and dickless, it was a nice thought, getting into his mother's gun cabinet, combination 5-12-69, his parents' anniversary, now a joke, taking that nice metal weight in his hands, sliding some bullets into the chamber, just as easy as squirting toothpaste, pressing it against his temple, and immediately shooting. You'd have to immediately shoot, gun to temple, finger on trigger, or you might talk yourself out of it. It had to be one motion. And then you just drop to the ground like clothes falling off a hanger. Just swoosh. On the floor. And you were someone else's problem for a change. He didn't plan on doing any of that. But when he needed some release and he couldn't jerk off, or he'd already jerked off and needed more release, that's usually what he thought of. On the floor, sideways, like his body was just a pile of laundry waiting to be gathered up. He busted through the doors and his dick went down, like just crossing into the high school emasculated him. Grabbed the bucket and rolled it back to the closet, washed his hands with hard lava soap. He headed down the stairwell and toward the back door as a pack of upperclassmen brushed past him toward the parking lot, his head feeling hot under the black hair, imagining what they were thinking. Freak, just like the coach. And they said nothing. Didn't even look at him, actually. 30 seconds behind them, he banged open the doors, the sun against the snow a shocking white. If this was a video, now would be the guitar flare. The whammy bar. Bweeer! Outside, the guys were piling into a truck and peeling out in loose, showy loops across the parking lot. And he was unchaining his bike, his head throbbing, a drip of blood falling on the handlebar. He smeared it up with a fingertip, swiped the fingertip across the trickle on his forehead, and, without thinking, put the finger in his mouth, like it was a stray glob of jelly. He needed some relief. Beer and maybe a joint. Undo himself a little. The only place to try was Trey's. Actually, it wasn't Trey's place. Trey never said where he lived. But when Trey wasn't at Deandra's, he most likely was at the compound, down a long dirt road off Highway 41, surrounded by hedge apples on both sides, and then came a big brush-hogged clearing, with a warehouse made of a hard tin material. The whole thing rattled in the wind. In the winter, a generator hummed inside, just enough juice to run a bunch of space heaters and a TV with sketchy reception. Dozens of carpet samples sat in bright, smelly patches on the dirt floor, and a few old, ugly couches had been donated. People gathered smoking around the space heaters like they were actual bonfires. Everyone had beer. They just kept the cans sitting in the frost outside the door, and everyone had joints. Usually there was a 7-Eleven run at some point. Whoever was flush would come back with a few dozen burritos, some microwaved, some still frozen. If they had extra, they jammed the burritos in the snow alongside the beer. Ben had never been there without Deandra. It was her crowd. But where the fuck else was he going to go? Showing up with a broken forehead was sure to get him a grudging nod and a can of Beast. They might not be friendly. Trey was never exactly friendly. But it wasn't in their code to turn anyone away. Ben was sure to be the youngest, although there'd been younger. Once a couple had shown up with a little boy, naked except for a pair of jeans. While everyone got stoned, the kid sat silently sucking his thumb on the sofa, staring at Ben. Mostly, though, people were 20, 21, 22, the age where they'd have gone to college if they hadn't dropped out of high school. He'd stop by, and maybe they'd like him, and Deandra would stop calling him Tag, short for Tagalong, every time she took him there. They'd at least let him sit in the corner and drink a beer for a few hours. Maybe it'd be smarter to go home, but fuck that. The warehouse was rattling when Ben finally pedaled up, the tin sides vibrating with a guitar riff inside. Sometimes guys brought amps with them, worked the whammy bar until everyone's ears shrank to pinholes. Whoever was playing was pretty good, some Venom song. Perfect for his mood. Rum-a-dum-dum-rum. It was the noise of incoming horsemen, looters and burners. The sound of chaos. He let his bike fall over in the snow and worked his hands loose, cracked his neck. His head hurt now, a ringing sort of hurt, not as easy to ignore as a headache. He was hungry as shit. He'd ridden up and down the highway, trying to talk himself into making the turn for the warehouse. He needed a good story for the cut on his face, something that wouldn't get him as much shit as, "Aw, baby fell off his bike." Now he daydreamed that Deandra or Trey would pull up just in time, escort him in, no biggie, everyone all smiles and liquor when he walked through the door. But he'd have to go in alone. He could see for miles across all that flat snow, and no cars were coming. He pushed the flap up with a boot and squeezed in, the guitar peel banging around the walls like a cornered animal. The guy playing the guitar, Ben had seen before. He claimed he was a roadie at one point with Van Halen, but he was short on details of how anything really worked on the road. He glanced past Ben but didn't register him, his eyes floating out to an imaginary crowd. Four guys and a girl, all with fried-out kinky hair, all older, passing around a joint, slouched around the carpet squares. They barely looked at him. The ugliest guy had his hands on the girl's hips. She was stretched across him like a cat. Her nose was stunted, and her face was red with acne sores, and she seemed deeply stoned. Ben walked across the space. There was a huge gap between the door and the carpet squares, and sat down on one thin green patch about 4 feet away from the group, kept his eyes sideways on them so he could give a nod. No one was eating. There'd be no food to scrounge. If he'd been Trey, he'd have given them a shake of his head and said, "Set me up with some of that, will you?" And he'd be smoking with them at least. The guitar player, Alex, was actually pretty decent. A guitar was another thing Ben wanted, a Floyd Rose tremolo. He'd fucked around on one in Kansas City when he and Deandra had gone into a guitar store, and it felt okay, like something he could pick up. At least learn enough to play a few really kick-ass songs, come back here and make the warehouse shake. Everyone he knew had something they were good at, even if it was just being good at spending money, like Deandra. Whenever he told her things he wanted to learn, things he wanted to do, she laughed and said what he needed to do was get a decent paycheck. "Groceries cost money, electricity costs money. You don't even understand," she'd say. Deandra paid a lot of the bills at her house since her parents were gone so much, that was true, but she paid the bills with her parents' stinking money. Ben wasn't sure being able to write a check was such an amazing thing. He wondered what time it was and wished he'd just gone over to her house and waited. Now he'd have to stay here an hour or so they wouldn't think he was leaving because no one was talking to him. His pants were still damp from the bucket spill, and he could smell old tuna on the front of his shirt. "Hey," said the girl. "Hey, kid." He looked up at her, the black hair falling over an eye. "Shouldn't you be in school or something?" she said, her words coming in dopey mounds. "Why are you here?"
"It's break."
"He says it's break," she told her boyfriend. The guy, mangy and sunk-cheeked, with an outline of a mustache, peered up at that. "You know someone here?" the boyfriend asked him. Ben gestured toward Alex.
"I know him."
"Hey, Alex, you know this kid?" Alex stopped the guitar, paused with both legs wide in a rocker pose, and looked at Ben, hunched on the floor. Shook his head. "Nah, man, I don't hang out with middle schoolers." This was the sort of shit they always gave him. Ben had thought the new black hair would have helped, made him look less young. But guys just liked to fuck with him, or ignore him. It was something about the way he was built, or the way he walked, or something in his blood. He was always picked third to last in any team game. The afterthought boy who was grabbed right before the real shitballs. Guys seemed to know it instantly. They flirted with Deandra in front of him all the time. Like they knew his dick wilted a little bit when he entered a room.
Well, fuck them. He was sick of it.
Suck my dick, Ben muttered.
Whoa, the little guy is pissed.
Looks like he's been in a fight, the girl said.
Dude, you been in a fight?
The music had stopped entirely now. Alex had propped his guitar up against one icy wall and was smoking with the rest, grinning and bobbing his head. Their voices boomed up to the ceiling and echoed out like fireworks. Ben nodded.
Yeah? Who'd you fight?
No one you know.
I know pretty much everyone. Try me. Who was it, your little brother? You get beat up by your little brother?
Trey Tipano.
You lie, Alex said. Trey'd kick your ass.
You fought that crazy Indian motherfucker? Isn't Trey part Indian? Said the boyfriend, ignoring Alex now.
What the fuck that got to do with anything, Mike? One of their friends asked.
He sucked in some weed with a roach clip, the bright pink feather fluttering in the cold. The girl finished it off, cashed the joint, and snapped the roach clip back into her hair. One mousy curl tweaked out crookedly from her head.
I hear he's into some scary-ass shit, Mike said. Like serious conjuring Satan shit.
Trey was a poser, so far as Ben could tell. He talked about special midnight meetings in Wichita, where blood was spilled in different rituals. He had shown up at Deandra's one night in October, cranked and shirtless and smeared with blood. Swore he and some friends had killed some cattle outside of Lawrence. Said they'd thought about going into campus, kidnapping some college kid for sacrifice too, but had gotten wasted instead. He may have been telling the truth on that one. It was all over the news the next day. 4 cows slaughtered with machetes, their entrails gone. Ben had seen the photos. All of them lying on their sides, big mound bodies and sad knobby legs. It was fucking hard to kill a cow. There was a reason they made good leather. Of course, Trey worked out a few hours a day to metal, pumping and squeezing and cursing. Ben had seen the routine. Trey was a strutting, tan bundle of knots, and he could probably kill a cow with a machete, and he was probably fucking loony enough to do it for kicks. But as for the Satan part, Ben thought the devil would want something more useful than cow entrails. Gold. Maybe a kid. To prove loyalty, like when gangs make a new guy shoot somebody.
He is, Ben said. We are. We get into some dark shit.
I thought you just said you were fighting him, Mike said, and finally reached behind him into a styrofoam cooler and handed Ben an Olympia Gold, icy wet. Ben chugged it, put out his hand for another, and was surprised to actually get a second beer instead of a load of shit.
We fight. When you do some of the stuff we do, you're going to end up in a fight.
This sounded as vague as Alex's roadie stories.
Were you one of the guys who killed those cows? The girl asked.
Ben nodded.
We had to. It was an order.
Weird order, man, said the quiet guy from the corner.
That was my hamburger.
They laughed. Everyone did. And Ben tried to look smooth but tough. He shook his hair down in front of his eyes and felt the beer chill him. 2 fast, tinny beers on an empty belly, and he was buzzing. But he didn't want to come off as a lightweight.
So, why do you kill cows? The girl asked.
Feels good. Satisfies some requirements. You can't just be in the club. You have to really do stuff.
Ben had hunted lots, his dad taking him out once, and then his mom insisted he go with her. A bonding thing. She didn't realize how embarrassing it was to go hunting with your mom. But it was his mom who'd made him a decent shot, taught him how to handle the recoil, when to pull the trigger, how to wait and be patient for hours in the blind. Ben had shot and killed dozens of animals, from rabbits up to deer. Now he thought of mice, how his mom's barn cat had rooted out a nest and gobbled down 2 or 3 gooey newborn mice before dropping the other half dozen on the back steps. Runner had just left. The second time this was, so it was Ben's job to put them out of their misery. They'd wriggled silently, twisting like pink eels, eyes glued shut, and by the time he'd run back and forth to the barn twice, trying to figure out what to do, the ants were swarming them. He'd taken a shovel, finally, and smashed them into the ground, bits of flesh splattering his arms, getting angrier, each big, loose wield of the shovel infuriating him more.
"You think I'm such a pussy, Runner? You think I'm such a pussy?"
By the time it was over, only a sticky spot on the ground remained. He was sweaty, and when he looked up, his mother was watching him from behind the screen door. She'd been quiet at dinner that night, that worried face turned on him, the sad eyes. He just wanted to turn to her and say, "Sometimes it feels good to fuck with something, instead of always being fucked with."
"Like?" the girl nudged.
"Like, well, sometimes things have to die. We have to kill them. Just like Jesus requires sacrifice, well, so does Satan." Satan, he said it, like it was some guy's name. It didn't feel bogus, and it didn't feel scary. It felt normal, like he actually knew what he was talking about. Satan. He could almost picture him here, this guy all long-faced and horned, with those split-open goat eyes.
"You seriously believe this shit? What's your name again?"
"Ben. Day."
"Ben Gay?"
"Yeah, never heard that one."
Ben took another beer from the cooler, without asking. He'd bumped over a few feet since they started talking, and as the booze chilled him out, everything he said, all the shit rolling out of his mouth, seemed undeniable. He could become an undeniable guy. He could see it, even with that last crack, how that asshole knew his joke was going to whistle out and flop. They fired up another joint, the girl pulling her clip out of her hair again, the goofy, friendly flip of hair falling back to its normal place, her not looking as nice without it. Ben breathed in, took a decent amount, but don't cough, don't cough. Not enough so he got seeds in the back of his throat. This was ditchweed stuff, the kind that got you dirty high. It got you paranoid and talky instead of mellowing you out. Ben had a theory that all the chemical runoff from all the farms rolled into the ground and was sucked up by these mean, greedy plants. It infected them. All that insecticide and bright green fertilizer was settling into the grooves of his lungs and his brain. The girl was looking at him now, that dazed look Debbie got after too much TV, like she needed to say something but was too lazy to move her mouth. He wanted something to eat. "The devil is never hungry." That's what he thought then, out of nowhere, the words in his brain like a prayer. Alex was plucking at his guitar again, some Van Halen, some AC/DC, a Beatles song, and then suddenly he was fingering "O Little Town of Bethlehem," the binky chords making Ben's head ache more.
"Hey, no Christmas songs. Ben wouldn't like that," Mike called out.
"Holy shit, he's bleeding," the girl said.
The cut in his forehead had opened up, and now it was dripping lushly down his face onto his pants. The girl tried to hand him a fast food napkin, but he waved her off, smeared the blood across his face like war paint. Alex had stopped playing the song, and they all just stared at Ben, uneasy smiles and stiff shoulders, leaning slightly away from him. Mike held out the joint like an offering, on the tips of his fingers to avoid contact. Ben didn't want it, but breathed in deep again, the sour smoke burning more lung tissue. It was then that the door flap made its wavy warble, and Trey walked in. He had his arms folded, feet planted, slouchy stance going, rolling his eyes over the room, and then jerking his head back like Ben was a fish gone bad.
"What are you doing here? Deandra here?"
"She's in Selena. Just thought I'd stop by, kill some time. They've been entertaining me."
"We heard about your fight," the girl said, all sly smiles, her lips thin crescents. "And other bad stuff."
Trey, his long, slick black hair and chiseled face, was unreadable. He looked at the group on the floor and at Ben squatting with them, and for once seemed unsure of how to play the situation.
Yeah? What's he been saying?
He kept his eyes on Ben and grabbed a beer from the girl without even looking at her. Ben wondered if they'd slept together. Trey had the same disdain Ben once saw him direct at an ex-girlfriend.
I am not angry or sad or happy to see you. I could not give a shit. You don't even ripple.
Some shit about the devil and what you guys do to help him, she said.
Trey got his grin going then, sat down across from Ben, Ben avoiding eye contact.
Hey, Trey, Alex said. You're Indian, aren't you?
Yeah. You want me to scalp you?
You're not full, though, right? The girl blurted.
My mom's white. I don't date Indian chicks.
Why not?
She asked, running the roach clip feather in and out of her hair, the metal teeth tangling themselves in the waves.
Because Satan likes white pussy.
He smiled and cocked his head at her, and she started to giggle, but then he kept the same expression, and she shut down, her ugly boyfriend putting an arm back on her hip. They'd liked Ben's patter, but Trey was spookier. He sat there almost cross-legged, eyeing them in a way that seemed friendly on the surface, but was entirely without warmth. And while his body was folded in a casual way, every limb was held at a tense, sharp angle. There was something deeply unkind about him. No one offered to pass the joint again. They all sat quietly for a few minutes, Trey's mood unnerving everyone. Usually he was the loud, smart-ass, fight-starting beer swigger, but when he got upset, it was like he sent out hundreds of invisible, insistent fingers to push everyone down by the shoulders. Sink everyone.
So, you want to go? He suddenly asked Ben. I got my truck. I got Deandra's keys. We can go to her place till she gets home. She's got cable. Better than this freezing cold shithole.
Ben nodded, gave a jittery wave to the crowd, and followed Trey, who was already outside, tossing his beer can on the snow. Ben was definitely altered. Words clotted in the back of his throat, and as he climbed into the GMC, he tried to stammer some excuse to Trey. Trey, who just saved his ass, for unclear reasons. Why was he the one with Deandra's keys? Probably because he'd asked for them. Ben didn't think to ask enough.
I hope you're ready to back that shit up, what you were saying in there, Trey said, putting the stick in reverse.
The GMC was a tank, and Trey drove it straight across the farm property, bumping over old corn stalks and irrigation ditches, forcing Ben to grab onto the armrest to keep from biting his tongue off. Trey landed a meaningful glance on Ben's tight grip.
Yeah, of course. Maybe tonight you become a man. Maybe.
Trey flicked on his cassette player. Iron Maiden mid-song. Hell yes, the words hissing at Ben. 666, Satan, sacrifice. Ben worked the music in his head, his brain sizzling, feeling angry frantic, the way he always did to metal, the guitar strum never letting up, bundling him tenser and tenser, bumping his head up and down, the drums shooting up his spine, the whole thing, this rage frenzy, not letting him think straight, just keeping him in a tight shake. His whole body felt like a cocked fist, ready for release.
Libby Day, now. The stretch of I-70 between Kansas City and St. Louis was hours and hours of pure ugly driving. Flat, dead yellow, and littered with billboards. A fetus curled up like a kitten. Abortion stops a beating heart. A living room turned red from the glare of ambulance lights. Take care crime scene cleanup specialists. A remarkably plain woman giving fuck me eyes to passing motorists. Hot Jimmy's Gentleman's Club.
The billboards ominously advising love of Jesus were in direct proportion to those advertising porn liquidators, and the signs for local restaurants consistently misused quotation marks. Herb's Highway Diner, the best meal in town. Jolene's Rib House, come in for our delicious baby back ribs. Lyle was in the passenger seat. He'd debated the pros and cons of joining me. Maybe I would have more rapport with Chrissy alone, us being both women. On the other hand, he did know this part of the case better. But then again, he may get too excited, ask her too many questions, and then blow it. He sometimes got ahead of himself. If he had one flaw, it was that he sometimes got ahead of himself. Then again, $500 was a lot of money, and he felt somewhat entitled, no offense, to come along. Finally, I'd snapped into the phone that I'd swing by Sarah's pub in 30 minutes, and if he was out front, he could come. Click. Now he was fussing next to me, flicking the door lock up and down, fiddling with the radio, reading each sign out loud, like he was trying to reassure himself of something. We drove past a fireworks warehouse the size of a cathedral, and at least three bundles of fatality markers, small white crosses and plastic flowers gathering dust on the side of the road. Gas stations made themselves known with signs skinnier and taller than the wilting weather vanes of nearby farms. On one ridge was a billboard with a familiar face, Lizette Stevens, with that joyful grin, a phone number below for information on her disappearance. I wondered how long till they took it down, drained of hope or money. "Oh, God, her," Lyle said as we passed Lizette. I bristled, but my feelings were similar. After a while, it was almost rude to ask you to worry about someone who was clearly dead. Unless it was my family. So, Lyle, can I ask you, what is it that makes you so obsessed with this case? As I said it, the sky got just dark enough to switch the highway lights on, and all in a row, into the horizon, they blinked white, like my question had intrigued them. Lyle was staring at his leg, listening sideways, like he usually did. He had a habit of pushing one ear toward whoever was speaking, and then he'd wait a few seconds, like he was translating whatever was said into another language. It's just a classic whodunit. There are a lot of viable theories, so it's interesting to talk about, he said, still not looking at me. And there's you. And Chrissy. Children who caused something. I'm interested in that.
Children who caused something?
Something to happen. Something that got bigger than they were. Something that had unintentionally major consequences. Ripples. That interests me.
Why? He paused.
Just does.
We were the two unlikeliest people to charm information out of someone. Stunted human beings who got awkward every time we tried to express ourselves. I didn't really care if we got much from Chrissy, though, as the more I thought about Lyle's theory, the more it seemed like bunk. After another 40 minutes of driving, the strip club started showing up. Dismal, crouched blocks of cement, most without any real name, just neon signs shouting, "Live girls! Live girls!" Which I guess is a better selling point than dead girls. I imagined Chrissy Cates pulling into the gravel parking lot, getting ready to take off her clothes at a strip club that was so entirely generic. There's something disturbing about not even bothering with a name. Whenever I see news stories about children who were killed by their parents, I think, but how could it be? They cared enough to give this kid a name. They had a moment, at least one moment, when they sifted through all the possibilities and picked one specific name for their child. Decided what they would call their baby. How could you kill something you cared enough to name?
This will be my first strip bar, Lyle said, and gave his pert-lipped smile.
I pulled off the highway to the left, as Chrissy's mother had advised. When I'd phoned the only club listed, a greasy man told me he thought Chrissy was around, and rattled into a pasture-sized parking lot for three strip bars, all in a row.
A gas station and trucker park sat at the far, far end. In the bright white glow, I saw the silhouettes of women scuttling like cats between the cabs, doors opening and shutting, bare legs kicking out as they leaned in to line up the next trick. I assumed most of the strippers ended up working the trucker park once the clubs were done with them. I got out of the car and fumbled with the notes Lyle had given me, a neat, numbered list of questions to ask Chrissy if we found her. Number one, do you still maintain that you were molested by Ben Day when you were a child? If so, please explain. I started to review the rest of the questions when a movement to my right caught my attention. Far down in the trucker park, a small shadow dislodged itself from the side of a cab and started toward me in an intensely straight line, the kind of straight you walk when you're wasted and trying not to look it. I could see the shoulders pushed forward, far out ahead of the body, as if the girl had no choice but to keep moving toward me once she started. And she was a girl, I saw when she reached the other side of my car. She had a wide, doll-like face that glowed in the streetlight, light brown hair pulled back in a ponytail from a domed forehead.
"Hey, you got a cigarette I could bum?"
she said, her head jittering like a Parkinson's patient. "You okay?" I asked, trying to get a better look at her, guess her age. 15, 16? She was shivering in a thin sweatshirt over a miniskirt and boots that were supposed to look sexy, but on her looked childish, a kindergartner playing cowgirl.
"You got a cigarette?"
she repeated, brightening, her eyes wet. She gave a quick bounce on her heels, looked from me to Lyle, who was watching the pavement. I had a pack somewhere in the back of my car, so I leaned in and rummaged through old fast food wrappers, an assortment of tea bags I'd swiped from a restaurant, another thing no one should ever buy, tea bags, and a pile of cheap metal spoons. Ditto. The cigarette pack had 3 cigs left, one of them broken. I doled out the other 2, flicked a lighter, the girl leaning in crookedly, then finally hitting the flame.
"Sorry, I can't see a thing without my glasses."
I lit my cigarette, let my head do its heat wave dance after that first rush of nicotine.
"I'm Colleen,"
she said, sucking on the cigarette. The temperature had dropped quickly with the sun. We stood across from each other, bouncing up and down to keep warm. Colleen. It was too sweet a name for a hooker. Someone had once had different plans for this girl. "How old are you, Colleen?" She glanced back toward the truck park and smiled, hunched down in her shoulders.
"Oh, don't worry, I'm not working there. I work over there."
She pointed to the middle strip club with her middle finger.
"I'm legal. I don't need to..."
She nodded back toward the row of trucks, all of them immobile, despite what was happening inside.
"We just try to keep an eye out for some of the girls that do work it. Sisterhood thing. You knew?"
I'd worn a low-cut top, assuming it might make Chrissy more comfortable when I found her, signal I wasn't a prude. Colleen was looking at my cleavage now with the eyes of a jeweler, trying to match my tits to the correct club.
"Oh, no. We're looking for a friend. Chrissy Cates? You know her?"
"She may have a different last name now," Lyle said, then looked away toward the highway.
"I know a Chrissy. Older? Mid-30s or so?"
Colleen's whole body was humming. I assumed she was on uppers. Or maybe she was just cold.
"Right," she said, finishing her cigarette in one aggressive pull. "She picks up some day shifts at Mike's sometimes."
She pointed to the farthest club, where the neon said only G-R-S. "That doesn't sound good."
"It's not. But you gotta retire sometime, right? Still, it sucks for her, because I guess she spent a lot of money on a boob job, but Mike still didn't think she was prime time anymore. But at least the boob job was tax deductible."
Colleen said all this with the perky ruthlessness of a teenager who knew she had decades before such humiliations touched her.
"So should we come back during the day shift?" Lyle asked.
You could wait here," she said in a babyish voice. "She should be done soon."
She motioned back toward the line of trucks. I need to get ready for work. Thanks for the cigarette.
She trotted, again with that push of the shoulders, toward the dark middle building, flung the door wide, and disappeared inside.
I think we should go. This sounds like a dead end, Lyle said.
I was about to snap at him for going chicken shit on me, tell him to just wait in the car, when another shadow climbed out of a truck far back in the line and began heading toward the parking lot. All the women here walked as if they were pushing against a monstrous headwind. My stomach lurched at a lonely image of me trapped here or somewhere like it. It wasn't so unlikely for a woman with no family, no money, and no skills. A woman with a certain unwholesome pragmatism. I'd spread my legs for nice men I knew would be good for a few months of free meals. I'd done it and never felt guilty. So how much would it take to find me here? I felt my throat tighten for a second, and then snapped to. I had money coming now. The figure was all shadow. I could make out a halo of ruined hair, the jutting edges of short shorts, an oversized purse, and thick, muscular legs. She came out of the dark to reveal a tanned face with eyes that were set slightly close together. Cute, but canine. Lyle nudged me, gave me a searching look to see if I recognized her. I didn't, but I gave a quick wave just in case, and she stopped, jerkily. I asked if she was Chrissy Cates.
I am, she said, her vulpine face surprisingly eager, helpful, like she thought something good might be about to happen. It was a strange expression to see, considering the direction she'd come from.
I was hoping to talk to you.
Okay, she shrugged. About what?
She couldn't figure me out. Not a cop, not a social worker, not a stripper, not her kid's teacher, assuming she had a kid. Lyle she only glanced at, since he was taking turns gaping at her or turning almost entirely away from us.
About working here? You're a reporter?
Well, to be frank, it's about Ben Day.
Oh, okay. We can go inside Mike's. You can buy me a drink?
Are you married? Is your name still Cates? Lyle blurted.
Chrissy frowned at him, then looked at me for explanation. I widened my eyes, grimaced, the look women give each other when they're embarrassed of the men they're with.
I got married once, she said. Last name's Quanto now. Only because I've been too lazy to change it back. You know what a pain in the ass that is?
I smiled as if I did, and then suddenly I was following her across the parking lot, trying to keep out of the way of the giant leather purse that bounced against her hip, giving Lyle a look to pull it together. Just before we got to the door, she ducked against the side of the club, murmuring, "You mind?" and snuffed something from a packet of foil she pulled from her rear pocket. Then she turned her back entirely to me and made a gargling sound that must have hurt. Chrissy turned back, a broad smile on.
Whatever gets you through the night, she sang, waggling the foil packet,
but partway through the verse, she seemed to forget the tune. She snuffed her nose, which was so compact it reminded me of an Audi belly button, the kind pregnant women get.
Mike's a Nazi about this stuff, she said, and flung the door open.
I'd been to strip clubs before, back in the 90s when it was considered brazen, back when women were dumb enough to think it was sexy, standing around pretending to be hot for women because men thought it was hot if you were hot for women. I guess I hadn't been to one this low rent, though. It was small and filmy. The walls and floors seemed to have an extra wax coating. A young girl was dancing gracelessly on a low stage. She marched in place, actually, her waist rolling over a thong two sizes too small, pasties waffling over nipples that pointed outward, wall-eyed. Every few beats, she would turn her back to the men, then bend over and peer at them through her spread legs, her face going quickly red from the flood of blood to her head. In response, the men, there were only three of them, all in flannel, hunched over beers at separate tables, would grunt or nod. A massive bouncer studied himself in the wall mirror, bored. We sat down, three in a row at the bar, me in the middle. Lyle had his arms folded, his hands in his armpits, trying not to touch anything, trying to look like he was looking at the dancer, without really looking at her. I turned away from the stage, wrinkled my nose.
I know, right? Chrissy said. Goddamn armpit of a place. This is on you, right? Because I have no cash.
Before I even nodded, she was ordering herself a vodka and cranberry, and I just asked for the same. Lyle got carded, and as he was showing the bartender his ID, he started doing some uncomfortable impersonation, his voice going even more duck-like, a weird smile pasted to his face. He made no eye contact and gave no real signal that he was doing an impersonation. The bartender stared at him, and Lyle said,
"The Graduate, you seen it?"
And the guy just turned away. So did I.
"So, what do you want to know?"
Chrissy smiled, leaned toward me. I debated whether to tell her who I was, but she seemed so disinterested I decided to save myself the trouble. Here was a woman who just wanted company. I kept glancing at her breasts, which were even bigger than mine, tightly packed and well-trussed so they poked straight out. I pictured them under there, shiny and globular, like cellophaned chicken.
"You like 'em?" Chrissy chirped, giving them a bounce. "They're semi-new. Well, I guess they're almost a year now. I should have a birthday party for them. Not that they've helped me here. Fucking Mike keeps screwing me on shifts. It's okay, though. I always wanted bigger boobs, and now I have them. If I could only get rid of this, is what I need to get rid of."
She grabbed at a minimal fat roll, pretending it was much worse than it was. Just beneath it, the white glint of a cesarean scar snaked out.
"So, Ben Day," she continued. "Red-headed bastard. He really fucked my life up."
"So you maintain you were molested by him?"
Lyle said, leaning out from behind me like a squirrel. I turned around to glare at him, but Chrissy didn't seem to care. She had the incuriosity of the drugged. She continued to speak only to me.
"Yeah, yeah. It was all part of his satanic thing. I think he'd have sacrificed me. I think that was the plan. He'd have killed me if they hadn't caught him for, you know, what he did to his family."
People always wanted their piece of the murders. Just like everyone in Kinnicky knew someone who'd screwed my mom, everyone had suffered some close call with Ben. He'd threatened to kill them, he'd kicked their dog, he'd looked at them real scary-like one day. He'd bled when he heard a Christmas song. He'd shown them the mark of Satan tucked behind one ear and asked them to join his cult. Chrissy had that eagerness, that intake of air before she started talking. "So what happened exactly?" I asked.
"You want the PG or R version?"
She ordered another round of vodka and cranberry, and then called out for three slippery nipple shots. The bartender poured them pre-made from a plastic jug, raised an eyebrow at me, asked us if we wanted to start a tab.
"It's fine, Kevin. My friend's got it," Chrissy said, and then laughed. "What's your name, anyway?"
I avoided the question by asking the bartender how much I owed, paid it from a fan of 20 so Chrissy knew I had more money. Takes a mooch to catch a mooch.
"You'll love these, like drinking a cookie," she said. "Cheers."
She raised the shot up with a screw you gesture toward a dark window in the back of the club, where I guessed Mike was sitting. We drank, the shot sitting thick in my throat, Lyle making a whoo noise like it had been whiskey. After a few beats, Chrissy readjusted a boob and then pulled in another big gulp of air.
"So, yeah, I was 11. Ben was 15. He started hanging around me after school, just always watching me. I mean, I got that a lot. I always got that. I was always a cute kid. I'm not bragging, I just was. And we had a lot of money. My dad..."
Here I caught a flicker of pain, a quick wrinkle of her lip that exposed a single tooth.
"He was a self-made man.
Got into the videotape industry right at the start. He was the biggest videotape wholesaler in the Midwest.
Like movies?
No, like blank tapes for people to record stuff on. Remember?
Well, you were probably too young.
I wasn't.
Anyway, so I was kind of an easy target, maybe. Not like I was a latchkey kid or anything, but my mom didn't keep the best eye out for me all the time, I guess.
This time, a more obvious look of bitterness.
Wait, why are you here again?
She asked.
I'm researching the case. Her mouth drooped down at the corners.
Oh. For a second, I thought my mom sent you. I know she knows I'm here.
She clicked long coral nails on the counter, and I hid my left hand with its stumped finger under my shot glass. I knew I should care something about Chrissy's home life, but I didn't. Well, I cared enough not to tell her that her mom was never going to check up on her. One of the patrons at one of the plastic tables kept peeling off glances at us, looking over his shoulder with a drunk pissiness. I wanted to get out of there, leave Chrissy and her issues behind.
So, Chrissy began again, Ben was really sneaky with me. He'd like, you want some chips? The chips are really good here.
The chips hung in cheap snack packs behind the bar. The chips are really good here. I had to like the woman for working me so hard. I nodded a yes, and soon Chrissy was tearing into a bag, the stench of sour cream and onion making my mouth water in spite of its better judgment. Yellow flavoring stuck to Chrissy's bubblegum lip gloss. Anyway, so Ben earned my trust and then started molesting me.
How did he earn your trust?
You know, gum, candy, saying nice things to me.
And how did he molest you?
He'd take me into the closet where he kept his janitor stuff. He was a janitor at the school. I remember he always smelled horrible, like dirty bleach. He'd take me in there after school and make me perform oral sex on him. And then he'd perform oral sex on me, and he'd make me swear allegiance to Satan. I was so, so scared. He'd tell me, you know, that he'd hurt my parents if I told.
How did he make you go into the closet? Lyle asked. If it was at school.
Chrissy turtled her neck at that, the same angry gesture I've always made when anyone questioned my testimony about Ben.
Just, you know, threaten me. He had an altar in there. He'd pull it out. It was an upside-down cross. I think some dead animals, too, that he'd killed were in there. A sacrifice thing. That's why I think he was working up to killing me. But he got his family instead. The whole family was into it. That's what I heard. That the whole family was worshiping the devil and stuff.
She licked chip shards off her thick plastic fingernails. I doubt that, I muttered.
Well, how do you know? Chrissy snapped. I lived through this, okay?
I kept waiting for her to figure out who I was, to let my face, not so different from Ben's face, float into her memory, to notice the wide hairline of red roots springing from my head. So how many times did Ben molest you?
Countless. Countless.
She nodded somberly.
How did your dad react when you told him what Ben had done to you?
Lyle asked.
Oh, my God, he was so protective of me. He freaked, went totally ballistic. He drove around town that day, the day of the murders, looking for Ben. I always think if he'd only found Ben, he'd have killed him, and then Ben's family would still be alive. Isn't that sad?
My gut clenched at that, and then my anger flared back. Ben's family? The horrible devil worshippers?
Well, maybe I was exaggerating on that.
Chrissy cocked her head the way grown-ups do when they're trying to placate a child.
I'm sure they were nice Christian people. Just think, if my dad had found Ben, though.
Just think if your dad didn't find Ben and instead found my family. Found a gun, found an axe, wiped us out. Almost wiped us out.
Did your dad come back to your house that night?
Lyle asked. Did you see him after midnight?
Chrissy lowered her chin again, raised her eyebrows at me, and I added a more reassuring, I mean, how did you know he never made contact with any of the days?
Because I'm serious. He would have done some serious damage.